The wait was long and hard, but spring is finally here. And we're not the only creatures who've been waiting. Many creatures are greeting spring with song. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today with his spring special. We'll talk about woodcocks, sandhill cranes, snow geese, several different species of frogs, and other critters who are celebrating spring in a noisy way. We'll find out what we should be listening for in the next few weeks and what some of those noises mean. We also want to hear from you. What is your favorite sound of spring? Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Spring has finally sprung and creatures everywhere are rejoicing. This hour, we're going to talk about the sounds and songs of spring. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This is such a beautiful time of year. You know, it's a... was thinking, getting out over the weekend, how good it felt to be in a t-shirt again outside.
The air doesn't hurt your face anymore.
That's right.
and really, I mean, there was a cacophony of sound outside this weekend. I was at my parents' house walking by the pond, and on Friday evening, I went for a walk, and you could hear the toads croaking, and it was kind of, it was chilly, and the toads were slow, and there wasn't a lot of noise, and then I went out on Saturday, and there was so much sound.
Yeah, it's really incredible. It spring has been, as you mentioned, I think, in the opening, it's been a little bit late on arriving after the official date of 20th of March, but it's here, and you can hear it in the air. They're announcing it during the day and during the night and everywhere. It's really been fantastic. So.
Now, of course, one of the major sounds of spring are the songs of frogs, and you hear a lot of them, and it's kind of hard to pick out the individuals.
Yeah, it can be. The individual calls are difficult unless you just have, you know, a couple around. But if you have, if you don't already, you soon will, and our listeners in the northern part of the state may still have little ice on their ponds and lakes and that. I haven't heard about if there's been ice out on Clear Lake, for example, or not. That would be interesting to know. But we've had ice out around here for a little over a week, which is about... Well, it's almost a month later. It's 3 to 4 weeks later than we've had for the last several years. So it is. It's not all that unusual, but it certainly was. There was a lot of ice to, you know, to get rid of. In some cases, more than 2 feet of ice. So it was. It was a lot. Ice out was a little late, but as a result, the frogs have begun to call, and it's males that are calling, and one of them's that you hear very early in the year are the male chorus frogs, and they sound like if you take your fingernail and run it down a plastic comb. They're calling from ponds and puddles, and they're letting potential mates know of their location. Maybe we can play the chorus frogs.
Yeah.
Okay. You can hear that fingernail down the comb there. Yeah. Yeah, and being ectothermic, their songs are, as you mentioned, slower on cool nights compared to warm nights because they're slower. They're ectothermic. They take their temperature from their surroundings, and the water's still pretty cold. So they're and if the night is cooled as well, they're going very slow, or slowly. And that song is. It's an advertisement saying, "Yes, I'm here," letting their mates know where they are. Another one that will be, if it's not already calling in some places, I haven't heard them yet, but we will soon be hearing spring peepers. Spring peepers are a small, a very tiny tree frog, but their voice is incongruous with their size because they're so tiny. And yet, boy, you get a bunch of them together, and it is almost deafening. This eep, 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 and all of them together are just phenomenal. So let's listen to the spring peepers. That's a single eep, eep, eep. You can imagine. There's one answering in the background.
It's so odd to hear one by itself. Because usually there's a whole chorus.
Yeah, yeah. And it is. It can be deafening when you have all of them. I don't know if you have another track there of the spring peepers where there are many of them.
No, I don't have it handy.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. They're so deafening. It's really amazing. It is unusual to hear them. Now, it'll be much later, probably towards the end of the month before. Maybe in the southern part of the state you'll hear toads a little bit earlier, but they won't be they're not out right now in any areas that I know of. But we may hear the northern leopard frog certainly before the end of the month, before we're on again in May. You'll hear northern leopard frogs. Maybe we can play that one.
Sure.
Yeah. It's like a balloon, isn't it? Yeah. That's great. And you can just imagine their throats getting larger and larger. Yeah, it's amazing. So we'll hear that before the end of the month. I don't think anybody. It'd be interesting to have our callers call in and let us know if they've heard any of these yet. But certainly, chorus frogs and spring peepers will be out. If they're not out already in your area, they'll be out within a week or so, as long as the weather holds. And they can go back into quietness if the weather turns really cold for a week. If we have below freezing temps, they're not going to be out calling for very long, if at all, during that week. We may get there's some ponds that will ice over, just a skim of ice on the surface if it gets below 32 degrees Fahrenheit, so we may see that sort of ebb and flow of the calls.
But, when there's another freeze, I just saw pictures today of the blizzard of 1973 that happened on April 9th. So obviously these things can happen,
and
we had snow in May last year.
Right.
When we get another freeze, when things change, how do the frogs cope with that?
Well, if the water is unfrozen, they'll cope with it just fine because they just go in the water, under the water. But again, on the surface, it can be too cold for them, and so they will because they're ectothermic, they slow down. And as long as they don't freeze, they're fine. So if they can keep their bodies just above the freezing point, they'll be fine. And usually that means going down in the water. So as their body temperature slows down, so does their need for oxygen, for food, that sort of thing, so that they can go underneath the surface of the water and maintain a temperature above freezing. And because they don't need as much oxygen, they can absorb much of that from the water.
So they don't have to go back into the mud or take shelter that way?
No, they don't have to at all, unless it's really prolonged, a month or more. But it's usually just a day or two, and they're back at it again.
And are these all mating calls?
Yeah, they are. These are all calls, and these are only males frogs that call. The female frogs are pretty silent, except for a few squeaks here and there if they're captured. And they're really pretty pretty exclusively males that we're hearing right now, are actually totally exclusively. So.
And I know that people try to count frogs by listening to these different calls. And we did hear recordings that show us what it sounds like when just one frog calls, but
right.
usually it's a huge chorus of frogs. So
yeah.
how does that even work? How can you listen and know how many there are?
Well, there is a there's a training people can go through, and there's a whole series that the DNR puts out to help people learn the different frog calls. And there are different patterns. You can hear in those three that we played the difference between the frogs, and while the cacophony it becomes more difficult when there are thousands of them on a wetland here or there, you can still, if you listen carefully, it's like listening to an orchestra. You can pick out the oboes from the flutes, from the violins. You know, you train your ear to listen for the difference in the calls. And I guess that's the best way to explain it. It's like listening to that orchestra, and you can hear different ones come in. I used to do, around a campfire, I used to do what I called the frog chorus with kids, and one would be saying, fried bacon. Fried bacon, and that might be either the leopard frog or it might be the bullfrog. The peepers would say tomatoes, 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 tomatoes. and so we'd add in each of the frogs as we came to it, and it was quite a chorus.
And so when people are listening for the frog sounds, are they estimating the population or are they just listening to identify different species?
They're listening to identify different species, basically. And the different species are fairly easy to pick out. They're not necessarily trying to estimate populations at all. It's just species identification, presence, absence in a pond. And if people want to do that, they can call the or check online for the Wildlife Diversity Program of the DNR, and there's a whole CD we've put together of Iowa frog and toad calls.
And what time of day is best to listen for frogs?
Well, certainly the evening is best. In the height of the season, there'll be some frogs that will call just about any time they can, but mostly in the evening and nighttime, and because the sound carries better. There's no competition with other, other species, birds, for example, for the most part, and the evening and nighttime is certainly the best time.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about some of the other sounds of spring. And we want to hear from you. What is your favorite sound of spring? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is my guest today. This is Talk of Iowa.
April in Paris. This is a feeling no one can ever reprise.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the sounds and songs of spring. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me today. And we've been talking about frogs. Now we're going to move on to some of the other critters that are making some sounds out there. We also want to hear from you this hour. Let us know what your favorite sound or sounds of spring are. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jim, you want to talk about woodcocks?
Yeah, it is one of my very favorite spring sounds because it tells me for sure that spring is here. And it's also heard in the dark or in the evening as the sun is going down. It's a display, but it's more than a song. It's really a complex series of calls, of dance, of wing sounds that together make up what Aldo Leopold in Sand County Almanac called the sky dance. And while the bird usually nests deep in the woods, along streams and rivers, right on the ground, it's just amazing. And we do have them nesting here in Iowa. Their dance really comes from more open areas, often areas with a combination of shrubs and then openings of short grass or rock or something like that. And that's where the dance begins. But I'm going to read from a Sand County Almanac from April where Leopold wrote about the sky dance. And he says, "The show begins on the first warm evening in April at exactly 6:50 p.m. The curtain goes up about 1 minute later each day until 1 June when the time is 7:50. This sliding scale is dictated by vanity, the dancer demanding a romantic light intensity of exactly 0.05 foot candles. Don't be late and sit quietly lest he fly away in a huff. The stage props, like the opening hour, reflect the temperamental demands of the performer. The stage must be an open amphitheater in woods or brush, and in its center there must be a mossy spot, a streak of sterile sand, a bare outcrop of rock, or a bare roadway. Why the male woodcock should be such a stickler for a bare dance floor puzzled me at first, but now I think it's just a matter of legs. The woodcock's legs are short, and his struttings cannot be executed to advantage in dense grass or weeds, nor would his lady see them there. I have more woodcocks than most farmers because I have more mossy sand, too poor to support the grass. Knowing the place and the hour, you seat yourself under a bush to the east of the dance floor and wait, watching against the sunset for the woodcock's arrival. He flies in low from some neighboring thicket, alights on the bare moss, and at once begins the overture, a series of queer, throaty beats, spaced about 2 seconds apart, beep, and sounding much like the summer call of a nighthawk. Suddenly, the painting ceases, and the bird flutters skyward in a series of wide spirals, emitting a musical twitter. It sounds a bit like... I don't know if you can hear that or not, but yeah. And up and up he goes, the spirals steeper and smaller, the twittering louder and louder until the performer is only a speck in the sky. Then without warning, he tumbles like a crippled plane, giving voice in a soft liquid warble that a March bluebird might envy. At a few feet from the ground, he levels off and returns to his painting ground, usually to the exact spot where the performance began, and there resumes. Beep. So it is, it's quite a delightful piece of writing. I've always enjoyed that. But it is.
And that was from a Sand County Almanac.
Sand County Almanac, right, by Leopold, written in the 1930s and 40s, and mostly in the 40s, and published originally in 1948. But it's such a great description of the dance. And it's this complex series. As it comes down, it's sort of a musical. And then it's silent, and you watch him fly in. And you have to, I found it's best to wear dark clothing so that you can sit under a bush or lay down and watch him. And I've had them dance as close as 5 or 6 feet in front of me. It's pretty remarkable. And now is the time to be out there because this is when it's most intense.
Right about dusk?
Yes, right about dusk. And so if you get out and listen, you'll hear that sort of weird nasal beep, beep, and you may even hear that flutter as they come down, that or the as they go up. But you have to learn to listen for those kinds of unusual things. It's often drowned out by other night sounds,
like frogs.
Particularly if you're in the city, you know. So it's tough, but frogs especially.
So what areas are the best places? Because I mean, it takes a little bit of skill to find
these birds. I would say within a quarter mile of a woodland, and it can be a woodland along a stream because that's where they nest, is in these dense woodlands, right on the floor underneath oak woods. Those are pretty much statewide, so we should be able to find places like that. But it has to be an opening near there. I've been in areas in parks where they have mowed areas, and while he describes it as mossy areas or rock or sand, I've often seen them dancing in in an area amongst the shrubs where, and the shrubs can't be, you know, too high, but so within a quarter mile of a woods and a shrubby sort of messy area with openings between those shrubs that might be 10, 12 feet in diameter. And there might be grass or rock or sand or something, and that's the dance floor. So it's quite fun, and you can go out as a family and try and find some of these. It's just a delight.
All right, we have a caller on the phone right now, a couple of callers who want to get into the conversation. We'll talk about a couple of different species as the hour goes on as well, but we do want to hear from you. Let us know what your favorite sound or sounds of spring are. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Randy is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Randy.
Hi. My favorite sound of spring is the cardinal. Because where I grew up in the San Joaquin Valley in California, we only had things like sparrows and blackbirds.
Sure.
So they weren't songbirds. But I also have a question about a bird identification, and I hope I can replicate the sound somewhat. I only hear it in the spring, and I hear this call. I have tried looking for the bird, and I cannot see it. So either it's hiding really well, or it's very small. Okay. And the call goes something like, do-do-do, it's an interval. Or it may be just one where it goes, do-do,
yeah.
do-do.
That's great. And what you're hearing, it is a very small bird, but it's a bird that's been with us year-round. They're calling right now. I was out this morning taking my dog out, and they were calling, and so I answered them. And you can actually bring them in if you learn to whistle like them. And
that's it.
Yeah, and it's
exactly.
Either or a double at the end, a that is the black-capped chickadee, or the chickadee that's been with us at our feeders all winter long. And the males, they start relatively early in the spring, actually usually before the official beginning of spring on the 20th or 21st of March. Usually more towards early March, they'll be out there and sort of testing it out just to make sure that their call is good. And again, it's the male chickadees that are doing that. So look for that little guy a little higher up in the tree usually. Usually 10 to 15 to 20 feet up, you'll see them, and they'll be out at the end of a branch singing.
A black-capped chickadee.
Chickadee, right. And they're a little guy, real tiny little guy. And
so if they've been around all year round, and the cardinals are too,
right?
Why do we only hear them in, spring and, I hear the cardinal in the summer too.
Right. You know? Great question. And it's a matter of establishing territory, and it's triggered by the gradual lengthening of the day. So as the day gets longer, it triggers something in their physiology that says, "Hey, it's time to be looking for a mate. It's time to establish your territory," and that's what that lengthening daylight says to them, and they automatically it's just an automatic response then to that lengthening of the day. And for males, it's a matter of establishing the territory and advertising. It comes down to advertising, and that's exactly what they're doing.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your call, Randy. And, we were actually talking about the black-capped chickadee just a week or so ago on Talk of Iowa, because it's a bird that photographers seem to love, because you can bring them in close, right?
Oh, yeah. You can. If you learn how to imitate that call and call back, they'll say, "Wait a minute. who's in my territory? And they'll come in closer and closer until they spy you and they go, gee, that's an ugly chickadee.
I'm not threatened by that guy at all.
No, not at all.
All right, let's take another call and then we'll talk about another species. Bernard is on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Bernard.
Hi. I have an unusual sound. For the last about 10 days, a robin has been trying to fly through the window on the east side of our house.
Yeah.
And it just flies up the window, and it never gives up. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just the males in this case, but the females will do it as well. You probably have a robin. We've had a lot of robins in recent years. There are a lot of robins that have spent the winters with us. It used to be that they were the harbingers of spring, but now they seem to be with us. I had a flock of 40 to 50 that was here year round. Part of it is probably the availability of food, but also the warming of the climate has definitely had a lot to do with it. But what they're doing is again, towards spring, they're very territorial. It is usually the males, but not exclusively at all. The females will do it as well, female robins. Cardinals will also do this. And what's happening is that glass is a human invention, and they see the reflection in the glass and think that it's another robin or a cardinal invading their territory. Female robins will do it, especially when they've established a nest or an area that they've begun building a nest in, and they will defend that nest site to the point where they will get bloodied and the window will be very dirty and everything. The solution to it is either, if they haven't begun building already, cut back the bushes a little bit from the window so that it's not quite so close. But the really permanent solution is to take some wax paper, and if you tape it to the outside of the window, it still allows some light to come through, but doesn't reflect back their image as they would see in the glass, and therefore they'll stop hitting your window. Now, if you leave it up for a couple of weeks, and that's about the length of time the wax paper will probably survive outside anyway, they'll either go away or they'll stop doing it, and it'll stop bothering you. But you I know what you mean by the sound, because you hear them hitting against the window, and it's kind of, sometimes a cardinal will stand right on the ledge, if you've got a wide ledge outside the window, and attack its image in there.
Well, Bernard, thank you so much for your call. And I have seen people put up like cut out images of birds and paste them up in their window. Does that do any good?
Not a whole lot, actually. The research on it shows that, it helps a little bit. If they still see their image, they're going to still attack it in another corner of the window. I've even had people call sometimes with robins or cardinals attacking the mirror on their car.
Right. We have a cardinal who, if we have to park in a certain spot, we don't normally park, but he has a really hard time with that image.
Yeah, he does. He just thinks it's another guy just horning in on his territory, you know. So it's amazing.
Amazing. So you could, of course, easily cover the mirror of a car.
Right. Right. Yeah. Take it off when you're driving. But
right. All right. Well, thank you so much for your call, Bernard. And you're welcome to join our conversation with your favorite sounds of spring or your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's talk about sandhill cranes now.
Yeah. There's another one of my favorite birds, because the dances are so spectacular. And a lot of them are already have gone through Iowa, but we are fortunate now. We actually have sandhill cranes nesting once again in Iowa in a few places. And as they go through, if it's a matter, I think, Charity, of learning to listen to the sounds. Because if I hear sandhill cranes, and I don't hear very well anymore, but if I hear them, it's just, boy, it just perks up my day. Because these are birds that are overwintering in the southern U.S. and northern Mexico. And as they come north, this is a big investment of energy. I once watched from a I watched the fall migration of sandhill cranes and from the top of a butte in Montana, and watched 100,000 cranes get up in the morning, about 1,000 at a time, and start winging their way south to spend the winter. So it's a spectacular migration, and it's the one of the nearest things, I think, to the watching the wildebeest on the Serengeti that we have in North America. Anybody who's been to Kearney or Grand Island, Nebraska, or in between those two towns has seen the sandhill cranes, and we're fortunate that that's the narrow funnel at which about 82% of all the cranes in North America pass through that narrow funnel, and then they'll spread out both north and south of that area. So this is a stopover place, and if you've never been there, it is absolutely a must see tour to take yourself out there some spring, especially and even in the fall. But its spring is really spectacular. And as they go through, you'll hear this. You hear that rattle.
And we'll have to talk more about why they make that sound and how they make that sound in just a moment, Jim. We're going to take a short break. My guest is wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're talking about the sounds of springs this hour. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Morning's kiss wakes trees and flowers, and to them I'd like to drink a toast. I walk in the park just to kill lonely hours. Spring can really hang you up the most.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today, and we are talking about the sounds of spring. You're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. And maybe you can play those cranes for us one more time,
sure.
Jim.
Sure. I'm going to have to pull it up here again. The cranes, like a lot of other birds that have this deep throat, it's caused by a voice box called the syrinx in birds, syrinx, and it's located at the sort of the lower end of the trachea, very near the lungs. So you can see that it's caused by air passing through that. It's not actually up in the throat. It's deep down near the lungs, and there are two pairs of sort of elastic, almost like rubber bands, membranes that are stretched across that opening, and they vibrate as air passes through them out of the lungs, and so changes in the tension of the membranes made by the muscles in the throat that control that trachea that changes the pitch. Then the more you stretch them or the less stretch them, you can imitate this with a rubber band. The more you stretch it, the higher the tone. The less you stretch it, the lower. And so the longer and wider the trachea, the deeper the voice. So this call of the, let's see if I can play it again here. Doesn't want to call. Let's see.
We may just have to remember.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to set you to an
impossible
task.
Yeah, that's okay. It didn't want to call this for some reason. But anyway, that sort of is actually fairly loud for them. But if you think about a trumpeter swan or a whooping crane, those are booming voices. So they have really long trachea that serves more like a resonator than as it comes out. So the longer the trachea, the deeper and the louder the sound can be. So it's a matter of having the physical. So we try and imitate it sometimes, but it's not the same because our voice box is very different than that of birds.
And what are they saying when they're making that sound?
Well, they're saying all kinds of things. It's not the sound of spring is not just for our enjoyment, although that's certainly considerable. It's that songs carry messages. Songs, as I mentioned earlier, they advertise. They say, "Hey, baby, here I am." But it's more than that. The strength of the sound that they make, the song that they might sing, indicates vigor or fitness. It also helps them establish a territory. So the stronger the sound, in many cases, the larger their territory. And what they're doing, they're establishing territory to protect the resources, the food resources, the nesting resources, the safety of the area that they're defending. And that says to the potential mate, "Hey, I am a tough guy. I can defend. I have a wonderful territory here. You want to come live with me?" And so that it helps establish those territory. And also, if you think about right now, we're hearing lots and lots of red-winged blackbirds at Oakley. That we're hearing from almost every fence post and tall shrub everywhere along the roads and back through the prairies and wetlands. We're hearing that, and what they're doing is you'll see that they're sort of spacing themselves out, and so they partition out the available habitat. Okay, you can have that over there, but I'm taking this one over here, and so they're partitioning the resources that are available in that habitat.
And as a rural bicyclist, red-winged blackbirds are one of the two best reasons to wear a bicycle helmet.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, what do they do to you as you ride by?
Oh, they'll dive bomb and they'll actually peck in your head.
Yeah. If you've ever watched one attack or several attack a passing red-tailed hawk, they'll do the same to you. Exactly. They're defending that territory. And that especially happens after the females are back. Right now, the males are just back. I haven't seen any females yet. And the males have established a territory. They always arrive first, and along with the grackles and the rusty blackbirds and some of those, they're all sort of setting these areas up. The singing also then tends to stimulate the males for sexual behavior. The singing that continues after the females have even are here and started nesting, and you'll hear our earlier caller mentioned hearing cardinals throughout the summer, it helps strengthen those pair bonds. And in some species, it helps identify the species, and differences in song actually identify individuals. Song sparrows, for example, have 20-some songs that they're capable of singing, and different variations are preferred by some males over other variations of the song. And so in some cases, you can almost identify individuals. It's not true in every species, but very much in song sparrows and a few others as well.
We have a number of people on the line who want to talk with you, Jim. So let's sure. get to a few calls, and then we'll talk about snow geese in just a couple of minutes. Mike is on the line from Waterloo. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I used to drive along the roads in the summertime and see meadowlarks on fence posts and so forth.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one for years now.
Yeah.
A meadowlark.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a poison put on by the out in the fields or something.
No, it turns out it's just habitat. Not just, but you're absolutely right. Your observation is correct. What you've noticed casually has been confirmed certainly by lots and lots of studies over the years. It's the loss of nesting habitat in particular, and that includes things like pastures and hay fields. You think about how agriculture has changed in the state, where we used to have lots of pastures, lots of hay fields, and now it's become pretty much corn and beans. We found when we had a lot of conservation reserve, we at one time had 2.2 million acres of conservation reserve program land, which is primarily grassland. That's where meadowlarks nest, and their populations were coming back when we had those particularly large blocks of because these birds nest right on the ground in grassland. So big blocks of grassland were really great for them. And but now much of that has gone back under the back into row crop production, and meadowlarks don't do well under that regime, and so their populations have begun to decline again. So yeah, your observations are absolutely correct. And they also, when we have both eastern and western here, they have beautiful songs that that can be heard, and they really as you say, they used to be everywhere, and now they're not nearly as common as they once were.
Mike, thank you so much for your call. Next up is Ray in Mason City. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Hi.
I got a spruce tree, I believe it is, not a blue, but it's usually it's full of grackles, and I think some house or song sparrows or actually house finches. But I heard one the other day that I never heard before. It was kind of a, it really wasn't a whistle or anything. It was just kind of a tick, 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 you know.
Yeah, You may be hearing chipping sparrows because there are some chippers back already, and that little, as you describe it, sort of a high-pitched chip may in fact be chipping sparrows, and they like that kind of that denseness of spruces and cedars to nest in. So they nest often very close to the ground, 3-4 feet off the ground, in the denseness of those of shrubs and trees. And you may be hearing chipping sparrows. Check that out. They're pretty small. They're about the size of a chickadee and have a little red cap.
See, of course, I can very seldom see anything in there. But you were talking about robins and cardinals tacking on windows.
Sure.
15 years ago or so, I had one, and he always told me when he was feeding, because I would hear him attack the window.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And he would run every bird off so he could eat by himself.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a young one now that he seems to be patient and lets the little birds eat.
Sure, yeah.
And the male comes and then the female comes. Never together.
I'll be darned.
One time that one that was always chasing everything off, I was coming home from work and that cardinal was on the ground.
Oh, sure.
And I walked up within 5 feet of it. And it didn't even move.
I'll be darned.
That just wasn't a normal cardinal response.
Right. Yeah, you don't expect that at all. So, keep listening and watching. And the natural world has lots of surprises for us. So,
Ray, thanks a lot for your call. And let's talk about snow geese before we run out of time.
Yeah, they're just snow geese. Most of them have gone through. But we can still hear some. Again, I think it's a matter of training your ear to hear the difference between snow geese and Canada geese. I think most of our listeners will know Canada geese, that sort of strong honk, honk, honk that goes on. But now snow geese have what I would call, they have a honk, but it's much higher. And they're winging their way northward now to their nesting grounds in the Arctic. And there are lots of them around. They've actually spread out in the last couple of decades. So we can hear them in central and even eastern Iowa. It used to be just the western part that we would hear them primarily. So again, if you train your ear, you can kind of hear that the difference, the highness of that call as opposed to the lower honking. And they're often migrating at night, so you want to be out there and listen, and certainly hearing the Canada geese is not unusual for anybody anymore, but it's still a great sound.
It is. It's a wonderful, wonderful sound.
You bet.
We have this email from Wanda. She says, I hear a sound in the timber, spring through fall, that sounds like tonk, tonk. Reminds me of someone playing one of those percussion instruments in elementary school that were referred to as wooden blocks. Kind of a hollow sound. Any ideas? We once thought it was a yellow-billed cuckoo, but we never actually see whatever makes this sound, and we have seen the cuckoos.
Yeah, cuckoo. You really can hear that as a and I don't think it. Well, it may sound sort of block like, and it might be a cuckoo, but they're late arrivers, and we won't really see or hear them until late spring, early summer at the earliest, because they come from a long way south, and they're late arrivers, short-term nesters, and early leavers. So they're not here very long, and they have to grow their young very, very quickly. So it could be cuckoo that she's hearing. I'm trying to think of anything else that might sound like that. If you take two sort of granite rocks and knock them together, it sounds like cricket frogs. But it doesn't sound to me like she thinks it's a frog. She thinks that's probably a bird. So it could be a cuckoo that she's hearing. If she gets online and has an opportunity to get online and just types in yellow-billed cuckoo and black-billed cuckoo, she can listen to that sound and see if that doesn't agree with what she's been hearing.
All right. Ellen is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I live on the Des Moines River and feed. We have eagles, hawks, mourning doves, cardinals, everything, and I feed them all winter.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had a bird that keeps coming by, and I can't catch it on camera. It's always gone. It looks like a small speckled guinea hen, black and white, and it has a big red tuft on its head and a long beak that kind of looks like a grackle. And I can't find it in any of my books. It doesn't talk to me.
How big is this?
Oh, like a small guinea hen.
That it's big?
Large.
You sounds like a wild turkey to me that you're
well,
that you're describing.
But they have red tufts on their head.
Yes.
It kind of sticks up like a red tuft about half inch tall on its head and a
yeah.
long beak.
Yeah, that sounds like a wild turkey. Look up in your and they're commonly found along the Des Moines River Valley where you are. Even in the are you in the
in
city?
In the north part of Des Moines on the river,
sure.
And we have wonderful wildlife here.
Yeah, yeah, you. Yeah. By
it's
my
like
bet
living
is
in a preserve, even though I'm in the middle of the city. You
sure.
Know?
Yeah, yeah. That's great. My bet is that it's a wild turkey. That's the only thing I can think of from your description. And it's probably a hen or a young jake, and they would have that sort of red, reddish head on top, just as you describe it.
So. All right, Ellen, thank you so much for your call. And just as a coincidence, Dan from Des Moines also wanted to talk about wild turkeys. Hi, Dan.
Okay. Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to, the DNR's greatest success stories, the reintroduction of the wild turkey
you
and the gobble. The spring gobble is just spectacular. The other element is when out, for example, turkey hunting, get there well ahead of first light.
Right.
The woods are absolutely silent, and then the chorus begins.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Just wanted to mention that.
Turkey hunters know exactly what that spring woods sounds like because they're out there. And they'll hear those hens going, and it's spectacular. And then the woods wakes up around them. Everything starts calling. We've also lost a few things. So the juncos and the sweet-throated, white-throated sparrows, sweet songs of those that are singing, oh, sweet Canada, Canada, Canada. They're telling us where they're going. And that's what's happened as well. So a lot of those that have been with us all winter are heading north.
All right. And thank you so much for your call, Dan. And so really the next couple of weeks are a very special time to hear a lot of these sounds, right?
They really are. And not just the next couple of weeks, but I would say the next month in particular. And then the calls, because they're nesting or the mating season is over, in the case of frogs, they've laid their eggs. So you need to be out there whenever you can and listening very carefully for the different sounds that you can hear. You may hear the sound of a drumming of the woodpeckers. They don't sing; they drum instead on hollow logs. But the results are the same. They are advertising, indicating vigor and fitness, and all those things that other birds are singing for as well.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And happy spring.
Happy spring.
At last.
To all of our listeners out there, you betcha.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease. Jim will come back again next month to talk about some of the wildlife and wild places in the state of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And I want to just say thank you so much to Ben Stanton, who has been with us for about a year, and he is leaving us today as his last day as a producer on our talk shows, and he has made some remarkable contributions. Thank you, Ben, and best of luck.
No desire, no ambition leads me. Maybe it's because nobody needs